Due to the themes of this podcast, listener discretion is advised. Lock your doors, close the blinds, change your passwords. This is Secrets and Spies. Secrets and Spies is a podcast that dives into the world of espionage, terrorism, geopolitics, and intrigue. This podcast is produced and hosted by Chris Carr.
On today's podcast, we're joined by Ibad Beremov, and we discuss the imprisonment of his father, Dr. Gubad Ibadoglu, in Azerbaijan. Dr. Ibadoglu is an economics professor and was a leading figure of the opposition in Azerbaijan. He was arrested in July 2023 whilst visiting his family in Azerbaijan, and he was arrested on what is largely considered trumped-up charges due to his criticism of President Ilham Aliyev's repressive rule in Azerbaijan. In the show notes below, I've added a link to the Gubadi Files website that gives you more information on Dr. Ibadoglu. And also, I've linked to more articles that give you additional information on the political situation in Azerbaijan. So this is quite a difficult episode because we're talking about the imprisonment of an older man who is in ill health and his health is deteriorating. So if you feel moved or compelled by what Ibad tells us today, I've also added links where you can contact your senator in America or your MP in the UK. Obviously, the family would appreciate any political support that you can give on this. I hope you find this episode interesting, and thank you very much for listening. Take care.
The opinions expressed by guests on Secrets and Spies do not necessarily represent those of the producers and sponsors of this podcast.
Ibad, welcome to the podcast. Just for the benefit of the listeners, please can you just tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hi, thank you for inviting me. My name is Ibad Beremov. I'm the son of economist and scholar from the London School of Economics and Political Science, Dr. Gubad Ibadoglu. I study in Sweden, my master's degree, and I'm from Azerbaijan.
We're on here to talk about your father today, who is currently in prison in Azerbaijan, facing trial on charges that appear to be trumped up and made up charges. So I was wondering if you could just talk to us a bit about who your father is and what he does.
Yeah, my father was leader of the non-government organization Economic Research Center in Azerbaijan. It was based in Azerbaijan until 2014, when the government brought up the foreign agency law, which you already see in Russia too, and something that the Georgian government is also trying to bring up. Basically, you have to let them know about all the donations and all the donors you get from the foreign governments and the foreign organizations. And that led to him not accepting that. And people, there were other people like him too, who was forced to exile the country because those NGO leaders who was not in line with the government rules were actually subject to the tax evasion. So his current charges is not the first time government is trying to get him to prison. So he was in exile for 9 years from 2014 because of these tax evasion charges. And then he was a professor at the U.S. universities during this time, in UNC Chapel Hill, in Duke University, in Advanced Studies of the Princeton University, in Rutgers University. And he moved to London, London School of Economics and Political Science, in 2021. And he has been a scholar in LSE ever since that. Apart from that, he was a Reagan Fiscal Fellow in the National Endowment for Democracy in the Washington, D.C., and he has been also set up a party in Azerbaijan, though he was in exile while setting up this party called Azerbaijan Democracy and Prosperity Party, and he is the chairman of this party.
Can you talk to us a little bit about the political situation in Azerbaijan, kind of give the audience a bit of a guide to the politics that kind of underlines some of what's been going on?
Sure. I think we should start by the fact that Azerbaijan has been ruling by the same family over 30 years now. If we look at the last years of Soviet Union, Azerbaijan SSR was under the leadership of Haydar Aliyev, who became Azerbaijan's second president after taking over the role from the Abu Fazer Chibai in 1993. So Aliyev family has not been in charge of Azerbaijan in the last 40 years, for only briefly for 2 years. And apart from that, they have been the one ruling the family. He led the country until his death in 2003, which they actually did hide it until the last moment. In fact, his death was hidden so that his son could become the next president.
Okay.
And then his son took over, Ilham Aliyev, in 2003. In a very scandalous sham elections, and ever since that, there has been, even before that, there was not any fair election in the country. Haydar Aliyev did came to power because there was a war in the country, and Abu Fazer Chibai left basically the position empty, vacant. So there has never been a fair election for this family to actually get the mandate of ruling the family, and they have always been quite oppressive towards the civil society, but lately we've seen even ever increased oppression. We could look at the numbers that last year in February, we had only 93 political prisoners in Azerbaijan. But right now, there's 288 political prisoners in Azerbaijan, which is nearly tripled. And that's a huge number if you think about the fact that Azerbaijan is a member of Council of Europe, just like the UK. And the main principles of Council of Europe is human rights, rule of law, and democracy, basically undermining all the main rules of the Council of Europe. And we could also look at how Azerbaijan organized their elections. We had election on the 7th of February, and the Aliyev, unsurprisingly, won again, but this time with 93% of the votes. I think that goes to show you how democratic Azerbaijan has been in the past years, especially under Ilham Aliyev. And now we have recently seen that the government has got rid of the media, because they actually introduced a media rule in 2022 that every media organization that would like to operate in Azerbaijan has to get their journalists registered by the government. And the government government has the capacity to say no if they don't like journalists. And they also could, as you know from the foreign agency rule, you cannot get donors from the foreign organizations, foreign countries. You cannot bring money to the country. That's punishable by law up to 5 years, and even sometimes even more than that. And in March, we saw that they have raided the Top Room TV, which was the last free media organizations working from Azerbaijan. We still have some media organizations operating outside of the country. So basically from Netherlands, from Germany. And by the way, they don't have website because their website has been blocked in Azerbaijan. The only way they are able to operate is through YouTube and Facebook. So Top Room TV also has been raided, and their founder has been jailed. This is after Abzas Media journalist and the director was jailed in December. And we basically have no longer any free media organization left in the country. And this is due to the media law that came to power in 2012, which is against the Venice Commission of the Council of Europe. And we also have a political party rule, which basically says that government can say no to any political party that they don't like, so they don't have to register them. There's no obligation. And now more than 70% of the political parties had to cease to exist after that rule. We basically, what government is trying to do with the political parties is to have very small number of political parties, not getting rid of it, so that, you know, you could show that you have some sort of democracy in the country. That's what they always do, right? They're trying to, you know, Russia also had an elections last month in mid-March. and Putin won. What was the reason of the election? Just to have that, you know, curtain in front of your eyes. It's the same with Azerbaijan. They're having this proxy political parties in the country that basically gets the money from the government, but the government keeps them just to say that here we have a democracy in the country, which is absurd. And through this political party rule, they are no longer going to accept any more political parties. So we have whatever we have at the moment, and we are not going to have any more political parties. We don't have any free media in the country right now. And the NGO rule has been from 2014. All the NGOs operating in Azerbaijan are basically government proxies, gongos, government-organized, non-government organization. And we see that the government is basically using the capital that they are getting from the West, from the oil and gas revenues to oppress the civil society. We have no longer any civil society left in the country. Whoever is still fighting is outside of the country, and it is actually very, very tough situation in Azerbaijan right now, because everyone is afraid, everyone is scared that they will get jailed. The government do not have any sort of limits or red thresholds. They're basically imprisoning anyone that they dislike, and I mean that ritually. That's what is the current situation in Azerbaijan right now, and we see that with the also imprisonment of my father, who is contracted by the runners of economics, that they are not really trying even right now to look that these imprisonments are legitimized. They are basically imprisoning anyone they like and anyone they dislike, and then start this trumped up scenario of charges in order to keep these people in the prison. And it has gotten so bad that we see that people who comments on Facebook are getting imprisoned. There's a guy who is called Muhammad, who got imprisoned for 3 years in jail just because of his comments on Facebook. So he got jailed for the first time for 30 days, but he did not stop. That was a warning to him. And because he did not stop, they jailed him again, but this time for 3 years. And the way they do it, they basically call all these people, they basically charge all these people with the selling and use of narcotics. And that's a very, very famous Soviet Union tactics that it has been, the government has been doing it for ages. Soviet Union used to do that before Azerbaijan was a democratic country. So, and there was a human rights activist who was ex-police who actually gave an anonymous interview about this to Abzaz media, and he stated that the government actually collects the narcotics from the dealers and people like that, and they don't put it onto the records. They keep it hidden, and whenever there's a political prisoner case, they actually, in this sort of cases, that's when they use those narcotics. So basically, they bring up these narcotics and say that I found this in your pocket or in your house. In fact, there were some guys who have never even smoked a cigarette in their life getting charged with narcotics. And this is all police keeping them on the side and using for these political prisoner cases. The ex-police human rights defender who gave this interview, when Abzaz media journalists and the whole crew got imprisoned in Azerbaijan. There's now 7 members of Abzaz media got imprisoned because of their investigative journalist work in December. They managed to get to their laptops, and they found who was behind this anonymous interview. And then they actually imprisoned that guy with the charge of narcotics. So the same guy who actually revealed this is now in with selling of narcotics, and he would get probably at least 2 years in prison just because of that interview. And it goes to show that right now in Azerbaijan, no member of the civil society is safe. The country has reached to it is one of the highest level when it comes to oppression, when it comes to being I mean, you could basically call it dictatorship. If you exclude the proxy parties that are not even registering for the presidential elections, parliamentary elections, they're there just to be there, just to have this naming, you know. And there's a ruling Council of Europe, that there's a parliamentary assembly of Council of Europe that you have to send at least from two different parties. So they work with these proxy parties, and then they read them, like at least one of their members to parliament, and then they send those members to the parliamentary assembly of Council of Europe to Strasbourg, France, and just to show that we have democracy. But that's the same playbook that Putin used to play with, and Lukashenko's playing with. We have seen this over and over again, and Aliyev is just going the step foot of Putin and Lukashenko right now.
Yeah. Just to confirm what you were saying, just before we spoke, I watched a YouTube video about the elections, and it was a Turkish-made video, and it was painting a very positive picture of the elections and interviewing all sorts of people who are apparently proud to vote for the president, even though the elections are considered a sham in the West. And so, yeah, it's quite amazing, really.
I could tell you about how the sham elections are made up in Azerbaijan. I have never voted in my life in elections, neither in parliament nor in presidential. It doesn't make any difference anyway. I will give you an example. They will bring people by carousel. So this is called, you put everyone to the buses and you bring them to the polling station. They do that to show that there's a high level of participation. And then they also declined Council of Europe, Parliamentary Assembly of Council of Europe members to come as observers. In fact, it became such a big issue that Azerbaijan got suspended from the Parliamentary Assembly of Council of Europe, because it's against the law, Parliamentary Assembly of Council of Europe, to not to invite the observers.
Yeah.
It was so ridiculous that one of the observers from Switzerland, who is an MP, a member of parliament in Switzerland, they actually did invite OSCE, Organization for Security and Security and Cooperation in Europe. So this guy, who was both members of OSCE and the Parliamentary Assembly of Council of Europe, he came to Baku a week or a few days before the election, and he was blacklisted. He actually couldn't get through the security check in the airport. A Switzerland member of parliament got shipped out of the country to Istanbul within 2 hours because he was blacklisted. And then they apologized, and then they asked him to come back. I don't think he came back, but it goes to show that how the government treats, how oppressive they have become. They are blacklisting European politicians at the moment. And they brought this OSCE members to observers, which they also said that it was not a fair election. We did so high participation, which in the background, we know that those people were brought up by the buses. Mm. Another example, there was a woman who lived at the polling station, and they asked, who did you vote for? Why are you here? And she said, I voted because they threatened two of my sons that if your family will not vote, you are going to get you're going to get fired from the job. That's how it is in Azerbaijan. If you work for the government agencies, if you work for anything related to government, you have to vote. You have to share stories about this on WhatsApp, on Facebook, on Instagram. And in fact, in these organizations, there's always some employee who is checking this, who is checking everyone's WhatsApp, who is checking everyone's Facebook to see that you are doing your duty. And also you have to let everyone know that you have voted. You have to share a picture of Ilham Aliyev. I mean, even at the universities, they do that. You know, these clubs at the universities, the committees. So there was a screenshot from one of them, from the Baku State University, that the head of the committee sent a picture of Ilham Aliyev and said, and let everyone know that you have to share this today. And tomorrow you're going to share a new picture that I will send you. So basically, starting from universities, from students, from that young age, they are training these people to be a robot. And then when you start working, they force you to go to work because you're going to lose your job otherwise. It's basically no one actually cares about the elections in Azerbaijan, right? I mean, they know that the result will not change if they go or they don't. It's just the fact that they are forced to go. That's why some people are going. But even without that, I don't think the participation is more than something like 40%. Because unless you are forced because of your job or because the university, you are not going to vote. You know that there's no reason for this. The current president of Azerbaijan has never been given a legitimate mandate by the people of Azerbaijan. He has never won an election. Before the election, during the candidate discussions, he did not attend. He did not attend in 2018 either. He did not attend in 2013. 2008, he sends his assistant. Like, he does not even attend these discussions. That's how ridiculous the whole election system is in Azerbaijan. Because the president, you don't see him at all. Only the night that he wins, he goes out and he gives some very he always gives this very similar speech for a few minutes, and that's it. That's the only time you see him. Most of the people never see him at all. He would never go to public. He has never been to public anyway. Before becoming a president, he was a gambler. He was addicted to gamble. There was a rumors about him losing even a house in gambling, more than millions, sometimes million dollars. I mean, he was basically put as a successor to his father, and now he's taking his son. Recently, he took his son to the meeting with the United Arab Emirates delegation. He's probably preparing his son to his role, and the elections are just shambles. No one is allowed to come. Those who is there was basically probably. I mean, if people doesn't know, there was a case of caviar diplomacy of Azerbaijan, which revealed in 2017, which was the case that Azerbaijan was actually bribing the European parliamentaries in the Parliamentary Assembly of Council of Europe. Because of this, more than 40 European politicians have to leave the politics in total. And one of them got jailed when this all got revealed. It's called caviar diplomacy because Azerbaijan government would invite them to Baku, let them stay in the most luxurious hotels, give them caviar and the best food, give them money every month. It was through like the Baltics banks. Just because it got revealed doesn't mean that they stopped doing that. Maybe they are not doing that in Council of Europe, but they are probably doing that in OSCE now. I mean, who is gonna tell that? It took so much time to actually reveal that in Council of Europe that there was a case of caviar diplomacy starting from somewhere like 2007 up until 2016. For 9 years, they have been feeding all these parliamentaries so that they would never vote against Azerbaijan. In 2013, they came to Azerbaijan as an observer to election, and they said it was fair, which was a ridiculous thing to say when you think about that. When you think about the fact that Ilham Aliyev has won more than 85% of the votes since he became president, he has never won the election with less than 85% of the votes, and they say this is fair. Which it's just ridiculous. So those people who come to Baku, I mean, Turkish, Serbian, it might sound a bit harsh, but also Italian MPs who said, oh, they saw a lot of participation, who's also Russians too, by the way, and Belarus. In fact, Belarus MP said we should copy the model of Azerbaijan. It's a great model. It goes to show that, you know, how ridiculous this is. So the understanding of democracy, everything about the democracy in Azerbaijan is nothing different than what you have in Russia. It's all hoax, it's all sham, it's not true, and it's just a made-up theater, made-up scenario to brainwash the Western governments and the companies who would would invest in Azerbaijan.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Is there anything you can tell us about the kind of police and security services in Azerbaijan?
I mean, Azerbaijan, by the Swiss society, is called a police country because country is being controlled by the police. You have police everywhere you go. In every street that you go, you have police, you have cameras everywhere. It's nearly impossible to do something in Azerbaijan and not to get caught in the camera because there are cameras everywhere, there are police everywhere. Police have the ultimate power given by the government to control the people. Mm. You basically cannot have any demonstration. Also, another example of the Azerbaijan democracy that you are not able to have any demonstration in the streets. You would get at least 10 police right away around you, surrounding you and taking you to the police station. So the country is being implemented by the police. I would give you an example from the COVID period of time. So people would not allow to go outside. And then this guy who left his house to throw the trash was actually surrounded by the police. And then the people actually started swearing at them from the windows. I mean, everyone was fed up with COVID period of time, right? And then they found all these people who were swearing at them, who were throwing stuff at them. And then they only like 2 days later, they raided all those houses and got all these people, jailed them for maybe months, for maybe more than a month, because you cannot disrespect police. Police is the one who is putting these implementations on the street. That they are the ones who is doing what the president of Azerbaijan wants them to do. They are here putting the rules, and they are the ones who make sure that this got implemented in the country. We had a new rule that all the taxis has to be either white or red in Azerbaijan, probably because of reading up to the COP. And this is like, this will also be implemented by the police. Police would definitely control all this stuff. And this is the case you have in Turkmenistan. If people doesn't know about Turkmenistan, that's North Korea, but a bit less known. Turkmenistan also only have white cars allowed, and I think maybe black too, but that's it, only two colors, because the leader of Turkmenistan likes white marble, and he doesn't want the city to look bad. That's the same thing the Azerbaijan government also said. They want the city, they only want like the taxis in two colors so that the city would look nice. I mean, this is how they implement stuff, and they're doing it to the police. So police is the ultimate decider when it comes to the implementing. They're the ones who's making sure that there's no protest in the streets, making sure that the people are following the rules, making sure that no one is talking, no one is using their any sort of human rights, you know, freedom of expression, let's say. So they are the ones who's making sure that the government is getting what they want to get. And also bribery in Azerbaijan is all over the place. Police gets you while driving, and you could always bribe the police. Even though you might be right, but if you don't know your rules, the police would always either gonna charge you, but they always want you to bribe them anyway. So you can use bribery in every way in Azerbaijan. I mean, there are cases when people hit pedestrian by their car, and then they pay, and they don't even get jail time. Because it's sometimes more than just a few thousand. But if you give enough money, you could get away with everything in Azerbaijan. Because also you have to, I mean, the driving license is ridiculous. I think 95% of the drivers in Azerbaijan got their licenses through bribery. So anything anything you want to get in Azerbaijan, you just need the money and you would do it to the bribery. And the police is the one who is, you know, controlling all the system, letting this happen and making sure that the government gets what they want.
Why is your father, do you think, considered a threat to the government of Azerbaijan?
When he got charged with tax evasion, just like the other NGO leaders in 2014, and he had to exile, he didn't have obviously any tax evasion. It was because he did not comply with the government. The government only dropped the charges when there was a pressure by the EITI, and EITI is the Extractive Industries Transparency Initiative, something that UK government was very keen to jump on, and the BP is also like someone that's, BP is also supporting this, and there's also Shell, and I think Total too. It's about the natural gas and oil industries, and he was a global board member from 2013 until 2019, until Azerbaijan got basically kicked out of EITI because they saw that the country is not progressing at all. So to the pressure from the EITI, from the Council of Europe, Azerbaijan did eventually drop the charges. But he was always an outspoken critic of the government. That's what he devoted his life for. He has been a member of the political parties since 1997. So now 26 years. He's now a leader of a political party. And by the way, his political party is also not registered under new political party rule. We call them party because I think it's quite unfair that party has to go to government own decisions about registering. But yeah, he's also one of them that did not get a registration. He went to court 6 times and he also got rejected, obviously because there's no judicial system in Azerbaijan, so controlled by the government. Obviously no surprises here. Apart from that, he was very outspoken regarding the Pandora Papers, and Azerbaijan government's name has actually was echoed in the Pandora Papers. So Aliyev's family and his associates acquired properties in London worth $700 million that actually came out in 2021. Mm. And he was one of the key persons to actually work on this whole process. There's a website called londonisazerbaijan.com. If you type it on your browser, you would see that he set up this website. You could see that all the properties that was bought by the Azerbaijan government, by the ruling family in London. You have all these properties in Holborn, in the most luxurious streets of London. I mean, we would leave the London School of Economics when I was in London, and he would show me like, oh, look at this building. This is acquired by Azerbaijan government. Look at that building. It belongs to Aliyev. I mean, that's how ridiculous it is. Basically, in the center of London, you have all these buildings that was bought by the Azerbaijan government to money laundering, to their set up shell companies in the Bahamas, in the Central America, in the Caribbean islands, and he was one of the key members to raise this, also with the Azerbaijani people. He made sure that the Azerbaijani people knows about this stuff. I mean, he was also. After that, we have a case of Javashir Faisiev, who lost £5.6 million in the UK courts to UK National Crime Agency because he basically couldn't explain where the money comes from. Bear in mind that this guy is an MP in Azerbaijan, and he got the order of recognition by the Ilham Aliyev himself last year in June. A month before my father's imprisonment. He was £5.6 million. We have Izzat Javadova, whose case is still on the court in the UK now, is £6.4 million. And we have Zamira Hajieva, whose husband was the associate of the Azerbaijan Central Bank, and he now has £30 million on the court right now, ongoing. This was all due to the Pandora Papers, and then it all got revealed. Basically, UK National Crime Agency got into this stuff. And apart from that, he was obviously raising the issue with the petro-authoritarianism in Azerbaijan, that the Azerbaijan government is basically feeding up by the petrol, by the oil, by the gas, and using this money to oppress their people. He would write a lot of articles about these cases.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, also he has two recent articles that got a lot of attention. One of them is in the Hungarian Foreign Affairs Review Journal that got published only 2 days before his imprisonment, that he claims that Azerbaijan, he's an economist, so he's looking from the economist perspective. He's saying that Azerbaijan has signed the contract with the European Commission in 2022, June, right after the war in Russia, when Ursula von der Leyen, European Commission President, came to Baku, Azerbaijan, and called Ilham Aliyev a rival partner. Incredible stuff, honestly. He claims that Azerbaijan, because Azerbaijan has taken some roles that they would increase their export to European Union. And he believes that with the increasing demand in the country, Azerbaijan is not going to be able to meet the criteria that they have signed with the European Union, with the European Commission. So they are actually selling the Russian gas to Baku, to European Union, but under the brand of Azerbaijani gas, natural gas. So that was one of the articles he published right before his imprisonment. And he looks at it from the economist perspective that it's not possible for Azerbaijan to keep up with the demand. In fact, the oil and the gas reserves in Azerbaijan is declining right now. We have been exploiting them for so long that now they are declining. So there must be a comprehensive and deep investigation regarding this, because I think there's a lot to uncover here. Another topic that he was working on was this fund that I mentioned from the MP, the Member of Parliament in Azerbaijan, Javanshir Feyziev, Izzet Javadova, Zamira Hajieva. So he also saw a chance to bring back this money to people of Azerbaijan. And in June 2023, 1 month before his imprisonment, he set up a charity fund in England and also in Wales, called Azerbaijan Youth Education Scholarship. And the aim of this charity fund was to work with the UK National Crime Agency and with the Home Office, because when the court settled the case, the money actually goes to the UK Home Office. Also, another example, Javanshir Feyziev, I think it was 3 weeks ago, the UK court frozen $50 million of his asset only 2 weeks ago. So there's even more than this. We are talking about way more amount upcoming. So he wanted to work with the UK National Crime Agency and transfer at least partial of this money, some part of this money, to the fund, and then use it for educational purposes to finance the Azerbaijan students' education in the foreign countries. I mean, it was in the first stage, because he got imprisoned 1 month after setting up the fund. But maybe this would have been agreed that these students would have to come to the UK. Then the money would actually stay in UK, but then Azerbaijani people would benefit from it. So the money that was stolen by the Azerbaijani people, by the people like Javanshir, by Izzet Javadova, by Zamira Hajieva, which is, we are talking about more than £50 million here, and definitely way more than that if we have to go deeper, it would have been able to go back to Azerbaijani people through the scholarships. So this kind of efforts and initiatives that he had was crucial for his imprisonment. I mean, we saw that 2 days after he got imprisoned, Javanshir Feyziev, the disgraced MP who was also called Azerbaijani Randomat in the UK media. You could search for Azerbaijani Randomat and you will get Javan Shafazyev. He called out my father for a treason, and he said he was in London working at one school of economics and political science in order to use their library to set up a coup d'etat in Azerbaijan, which he was going to realize in autumn 2023. He got jailed in July 23rd of 2023, my father, Dr. Kubadi Badova. So he was planning to leave the country. Within a month, he was going back to London, but they are now bringing all these false cases about him. He got charged initially by the counterfeit money, $40,000 that they found in his office, $40,000. He lived abroad for 9 years. The only reason he came back after the exile was because he got contacted by the Gongos, government-organized NGOs, that Azerbaijan, obviously not only him, but also other NGOs got contacted, that Azerbaijan government has dropped all the charges. There won't be any persecution for the NGO cases from 2014. You are free to come back to the country. And he came back to see his ailing mother, my grandma, who is now having very difficulty with walking. She is not able to walk, and he wanted to visit his mother before coming back to London, in which time period he got imprisoned. When he got imprisoned, actually, he was going to see my grandma with my mother. They were in the car, my father and my mother. And there was three cars, actually, one on the front, one on the left, one on the right. The ones from the left and right actually hit his car in order to force him to stop.
Yeah.
And then around 20 men in civilian clothes get out of those cars, and those were not police cars, by the way, dragged my mother to one car and my father, Dr. Ibadova, to the another car. And then they take him to this police station, which is for combating the organized crime. They actually hit my mother in the back of her head. She got bruises all over her hand, her arm. She couldn't sleep for weeks because of the pain or because of the bruises. And then they took my father to his so-called office, which is our previous house. Mm. When his NGO got shut down, he basically carried everything to that house, because there was nowhere else to put, and there's no reason to rent an office because there's no NGO. So they found so-called $40,000 in his office. I would give you another example, that when they raided Abzas Media, the journalist organization, in December, they found 40,000 euro in their office. So they don't even try to change the numbers. It's the same amount, but different currency. And then they charge him with the counterfeit money initially. And later on, they claimed that they found this extremist religious books in his office, calling him extremist religious, which is incredible, because right before leaving London, we were in Wetherspoon drinking a pint of beer together. And then you see that they are calling your father, they're claiming that your father is an extremist religious, which is crazy. And now they are trying to bring another charge about the money smuggling, which is basically the case that's from the NGO. So they are now trying to even bring up his NGO case back, which would see him, which he could get sentenced up to 17 years. He's still in pretrial, by the way, until May 20th. His pretrial got expanded twice now, last in February 15th.
Yeah. What is your dad's current situation? And so you're saying he's potentially facing a 17-year jail term. Talk to us about what sort of charges he's facing, what the penalties for that might be, and how he currently is. What's his health situation like as well?
He's definitely getting tested with his health. Even before imprisonment, he was not the most healthy guy. He had type 2 liver diabetes. He had hypertension. He did have back pains even from London. And now the government has this strategy to make sure that, because in Azerbaijan, it could happen that there will be a lot of pressure and you get released after 3 years, 2 years, 3 years. The government doesn't want you just leave and go back to politics. They want you to suffer in those imprisonment period of time, so that when you eventually leave the prison, you would have to just take care of your health issues moving forward. And that's what they're doing with my father too. I mean, we have a case of, previously we have an example from 2015 when Reiwa and Arif Yunus, who was imprisoned because of the NGO persecution. Back then, they couldn't go into exile. Only after the European Commission managed to initiate a doctor for them, a German doctor, who came from the same hospital, by the way, that Alexei Navalny got treated in Germany. Okay. So from the same hospital. And the doctor actually, only after that doctor started to examine them, it got revealed that Reiwa Yunus has developed a cancer in prison. And the Azerbaijan government always panicked, and then eventually they left him go to Germany for treatment. But till now, Reiwa and Arif Yunus are just fighting, obviously, with their health issues. And that's the ultimate goal of Azerbaijan government. Even eventually, you would leave the prison. You shouldn't go back to politics or being an outspoken critic. You should just deal with your health issues. And my father is also being tested with the same things right now. Regarding his type 2 Reiwa diabetes, I don't think he's no longer type 2, but he's now type 1 because he's now getting insulin injection. He never got insulin in his life before, and now he's getting 2 units a day, 18 shots in the morning and 12 shots at night, so 2 shots a day, 30 units basically in total. And this has been increased twice now. They started with very low, and now they put it to 25 units. Now it's 30 units. And we were told by the prison doctor that they are not allowed to prescribe more than this. So if this doesn't help, then good luck to him. This is basically what it is. I mean, It's because of the high blood sugar level. His blood sugar has been at risk twice more than the usual. It's not going down, and it's just triggers because of the insulin. His heart rate has got triggered. It's now around 115, 120. His heart rate is, and also he has an issue with the blood pressure. His blood pressure is so high that it's actually expanding the aortic root that's going to his heart, and the further expansion is basically means death by heart attack, because you cannot solve these issues. I mean, if you are hooked up to insulin, you cannot go back from that. Or if your aortic root is getting expanded, you cannot make it smaller. These issues are gonna live with him for forever until end of his life, and he's facing a diabetic coma because of the very high blood sugar. He's facing a possible heart attack because of the blood pressure level. His back pains have been so severe that he's not able to get up from the chair, get up from the bed without having to try for around 2 minutes. He takes around 2 minutes to get up. That's how hard for him to treat his back pains. And what the government does, they're just saying that his conditions are satisfactory. And whoever is raising the case, they are saying that you are interfering with Azerbaijan's judiciary system, which is nonsense, because there's no such thing as judicial system in Azerbaijan. As I told you, you could hit a human, a pedestrian, then just bribe the judiciary and get out without seeing any jail time. All these decisions regarding the political cases are not given by the judges, but by the court credits, by the government. So to say that they are basically saying that, oh, you would have to wait until the pretrial decision, until pretrial ends, and they have been extending it for 2 times now. So it's going to be 10 months in May, and it's already been 250th day in March 29th, and we are heading to day 300 now. So he's, because of his health issues, there has been a Rule 39 interim decision on the European Court of Human Rights, which is, can only be triggered, Rule 39, when a person faces a risk to his health that cannot be recovered. And we are the ones who prepared it. So we see the communication between the court and the Azerbaijan government. And the Azerbaijan government wife, when they sent the letters to the court with his medical reports. And the crazy part is that they could do that because there's no one else to say that, no, they're lying. There has been four attempts by the International Committee of Red Cross to see him, and they have been rejected. They were even allowed to see a prisoner next to his cell, but not allowed to see him. All this blockage around him is basically try to keep the narrative of him being satisfactory, him not needing any hospital or going to house detention. So he wouldn't. They would. We have had 45 appeal courts, all rejected. Not a single one we won. Not a single one. I mean, he's now being basically put into death. I mean, it doesn't have to be a direct torture. It's indirect torture. That's what he's getting. He's slowly being killed. And he's not the only one. There are all the other political prisoners who are facing the same issue. With his case, it's more dire because when Alexei Navalny died, the government got a bit scared and they did examine some of the political prisoners. In fact, Robin Wagner, who is the Bundestag member of parliament in Germany, head of the South Caucasus Committee, tweeted about this, and then the Human Rights Ombudsman of Germany tweeted about this, and Ombudsman said that I hope that they also did the treatment examination on Dr. Gubadibadovu, on my father too. Well, no, they didn't. They exempted him. So they are trying to, they're definitely treating him different than anyone else. They're treating everyone very bad, but more than anyone else, they're treating him absolutely disgracefully in order to make sure that whenever he eventually, obviously, we don't know when would it be. We are looking at the 17 years sentence right now. Whenever he eventually leaves, he could not go back to his political life. He could not go back to his outspoken critic life. He would just suffer and have to take care of his health issues until the end of his life. And that's his current situation in prison right now. He needs to walk around because of the diabetes. When I was in London, sometimes at least twice a week, we would walk all the way from the Kentish town to Holborn, because that's where the London School of Economics is. That's how much he used to walk back then. Now he's not even allowed to walk a minute. He's not allowed to go outside of his cell to walk. Like, so he's not able to do any exercises, nothing. And that all of this are basically indirect torture and getting his health even under more scrutiny and under more pressure.
Oh, it's truly awful. Silly question. Are the family able, I'm assuming the family not able to see him or be in contact with him?
We are able to contact him. He's able to call us once a week, but it's only for like 5 minutes maximum. Yeah. And he was calling me while we were in this meeting. And now I missed it, so yeah. I'm not going to talk to him this week. Maybe I would get a chance next week. So he doesn't have rights to call anytime he wants. He could only call like once a week, designated, and it's being surveillanced, obviously. And when the government hears something they don't like, in fact, in one of the calls, my mother managed to get her colleague from the London School of Economics to the call to the other phone. So she was putting phone next to the phone, and they heard other woman's voice. They cut the call right away. So they are surveilling all these calls, all these meetings. So we cannot talk anything. All we talk about is like, you know, the basics. How are you? How are you doing? Oh, I'm fine. Are you eating well? Are you doing well? And obviously wife, you know, yeah, I'm well. A father would never tell the reality to his children, obviously. And we know that his situation is not what he tells us. At least to the warriors, he cannot even call the warriors. We even had like 5 appeal courts for that, all got rejected. He cannot call the warriors. He could see the warriors, but he cannot even call them. So he could only call once a week us. And we are not able to see him. No, I last time saw him in London, and that was in May. So I haven't seen him ever since that. Then because he's brought to the trials, appeal courts, to back gates on purpose, there's not even a single picture of him ever since he got imprisoned. There's a picture of him from imprisonment on July 23, 2023, when he got imprisoned, around 8 months ago now. And ever since then, I have not seen a single picture of him, because the government makes sure that, you know, no one sees him. You know, you don't see anything, you don't know anything, you don't talk anything, you know, so that they could say that his conditions are satisfactory. And to be fair, what if I want to go back to Azerbaijan to meet him? What's going to happen? Probably I will also get imprisoned too. I mean, I let you know that people got imprisoned over Facebook post. Over Facebook post, they got imprisoned. I'm sure I did a bit more than that. And I'm sure that if I go back to Azerbaijan, I would get imprisoned. And they would. And I can tell you the charges now. I would get charged with the narcotics, selling and use of narcotics, because around 70% of the political prisoners are charged with that. It's very easy to do. I mean, you just say that you found a narcotics in his house, in his or her house, and that's it. So I cannot go back to even go to the prison to see him. I can only talk to him once a week. So this blockade is also applied to the family, not only to the International Committee of Red Cross. Or we know that there have been certain embassies, mostly Western countries, that have requested to see him. All got rejected. Mostly didn't even get a response at all. So they're basically making sure that no one is able to see him and no one knows his real conditions.
Yeah, it's truly terrible. That's truly terrible. Well, what should the international community be doing to help? And is there anything listeners can do to help?
So we have to look at the reality, right? The reality is the fact that Azerbaijan government is, because of the capital, they are this powerful, they are this oppressive. I mean, we remember back then when the oil prices shrink to around $40 a barrel in 2015. That was the worst days of Azerbaijan government, when they didn't have the capital. It was chaos. They didn't know how to rule the country. And these days, they are having a blast, obviously, when you had 2022 agreement with the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, the European Commission president, calling Azerbaijan a reliable president, a reliable partner after Russia, because they say that we need to diversify after Russia, and they go to Azerbaijan. Truly absurd. And that's one of the ways the Azerbaijan government is getting their capital. The other way is that, obviously, oil exports to the Western countries. We know that the European Union countries are getting oil exports. And we also know that BP is the largest foreign direct investors in Azerbaijan, period. They are the largest. And when through these governments, the European countries, the European organizations, European companies like BP, Azerbaijan government is making sure that they're able to oppress the people. And now the COP is coming. COP29 is being hosted by the Azerbaijan. And then I think this is a very important opportunity to raise the issue. I think we should not have COP when basically whole civil society has been imprisoned, when the media has been oppressed, that no one would be able to publish the realities. We should not have COP and celebrate the climate change. I mean, tackling the climate change. under this scrutiny. This is unacceptable. Ever since Azerbaijan have given the mandate to host the next COP, the government has leveled up their efforts to imprison the political activists, the civil society members, the media organization journalists. It's obvious that they would like to have a very peaceful, very easygoing COP without all these issues. And I think this is unacceptable. What the COP is all about the countries, right? You would have to do deals with the countries, with the companies. So you have a leverage. I think on COP, when it comes to COP, with UK, European Union, they have a big leverage. US, they have a big leverage that they could use on, because Azerbaijan government, I've been talking to some of the senior energy experts in London, in European Union, and they all say that Azerbaijan would like to sell their renewable energy idea. So they would like to get these contracts for the future years. This should not happen unless Azerbaijan government release the political prisoners, because I think human rights are not for sale. When you do agree with the government of Azerbaijan, when you do sign those contracts without forcing them to release the political prisoners, without forcing them to take necessary steps to let the democratic values to flourish in the country, you are basically selling the human rights for the benefit of capital, for the benefit of money. Mm. I think that's why the human rights should not be for sale, and we should not let Azerbaijan government have a peaceful COP29 without releasing all the political prisoners. There are 288 political prisoners in Azerbaijan. It's a big number. It's a big number for a member of the Council of Europe. There's not a single other member of Council of Europe with such a big political prisoner numbers. I mean, Russia got kicked out, so we are not talking about Russia, obviously. And Belarus never got into Council of Europe. So Azerbaijan is the sole member that having this many political prisoners. We shouldn't. UK is also a member of the Council of Europe and the Parliamentary Assembly of Council of Europe. So we should not allow a country who has all this responsibilities when it comes to COP, when it comes to Council of Europe, to manage to avoid them, to manage to evade them, and act like business as usual. And what I ask from the listeners kindly to contact, obviously it's important, obviously if you contact your parliament member, if you contact those MP, who are responsible for your constituency, and let them know about this issue, they have the power to raise it with the government, because we know that the UK government, we know that the European governments are playing this game with Azerbaijan. They are investing a lot of capital in Azerbaijan. They are making this deals with Azerbaijan government. All these deals and all this capital and all these agreements are coming on the cost of the people of Azerbaijan. We are the ones who are facing the bill. We are the ones who have to take the responsibility of the other Western governments, the so-called the governments who always embrace their human rights, selling the values of human rights for money, for capital. So I would kindly urge you to raise it with your MP. If you have an access to the media, to raise it with the media organizations. I mean, we know that today in the Politico, it was raised, and we know that there has been a lot of articles in like The Guardian, in Financial Times, in the Bloomberg UK, in BBC, in BBC Radio. So this case has been raised, and this is known to some of the people who are dealing with this sort of issues with COP29. And we need the UK government to take action. That's the most important part. So far, we have not seen that. So far, we have not seen the UK government to put the concrete steps. I mean, we are looking at the case where we could see the second Alexei Navalny case, because my father, Dr. Gubadibadova, is now facing an immediate health issues, and the Azerbaijan government is not doing enough to prevent this. And what happened after the death of the Alexei Navalny, we saw that the UK government came up with a new sanction package to sanction those who were working in the death of Alexei Navalny in that penal colony, in that prison. And I think we shouldn't wait until the person dies to take the concrete steps. We should, there should be thresholds that you should see that if that thresholds are met, then you should take an action. And I think those thresholds have been met. I think we are looking at the cases where the people like my father, Dr. Gubadibadova, or some other political prisoners could face death, where we are looking at the case where these people who are only getting persecuted because of their freedom of expression. And I think if we are sanctioning Russia for these reasons, if we are blaming Russia, what difference does the Azerbaijan government have from the Russia that we are turning a blind eye to what's happening in Azerbaijan in terms of the atrocities the Azerbaijan government is doing to their civil society, to the critics? And that's why I would kind of ask everyone to make sure that to raise it as much as with their MPs. Your letters to MPs mean a lot, because they have the responsibility to raise these cases on behalf of you. And it's obvious that with enough pressure, the governments would be forced to take an action. The government would be forced to say that, because they have obviously connections, because they would say that to the Azerbaijan government that we have been pressured and this is a no-go now. We cannot continue like this. And I think it's important to make sure that we don't have COP29 like a business as usual situation, circumstances. We should make sure that the Azerbaijan government knows that this is unacceptable.
Yeah, indeed. Well, Ibad, where can listeners sort of find out more about this? Do you have a website or anything they could particularly go to?
Yes. In fact, we had a first website that got hacked by the Azerbaijan government. We have been having a lot of attacks by the Azerbaijan government. They raided my brother's house in the U.S., and, you know, it's obviously a question whether they did it. But when you look at what happened, they only stole the documents regarding my father. That is not your usual burglar.
And so this was people broke into your brother's house and stole documents, yeah?
Yeah. In the U.S., he studies in Rutgers University, where my father used to work, Dr. Gubadibadova, and he basically he was with the other students from the university, and they broke into the house. They only broke into his room, and they didn't even steal things from other guys' room. So we also have all this propaganda about him, about our family, all over the Azerbaijan media, just like everything, just like the judicial system. The media is also controlled by the Azerbaijan government. All the remaining ones are, as I said, operating from outside of the country with very limited access. They don't have any website, only to Facebook and YouTube. So basically, we got hacked on the website. We are getting a lot of pressure, but we now have a new website called thegubadfiles.com. That's thegubadfiles.com. That's where you could find all the information about his imprisonment and all the all the cases that have been brought up by the European Court of Human Rights, by the European Parliament. We have an urgent resolution on the European Parliament. His case has been raised in the UK Parliament too. His case has been raised several times in the US. There's a resolution on the Senate, also on the House in the US, basically regarding his case and regarding his imprisonment. And we put all of these details into this website. You could also find information about this on the Twitter. Me, myself, and my sister, Zara Bayramova, that's V-H-A-R-A, Bayramova. We are continuously, and also my brother, Emin, that's E-M-I-N, we are continuously posting about everything that's happening.
Yeah.
So you could use the website, you could use the Twitter, you could look at the, you could search for his name on Google and you would get articles with published by the media outlets that you could read about it. So there are many platforms that you could find the information about, and I think they're very informative, and I think we try to put as much information as possible. We have videos about him, his imprisonment. We have his articles that he has written about the gas deal between the Azerbaijan and the EU and how Azerbaijan government might be using Russian gas to sell to the EU, or about his charity fund and about all this the cases in the UK National Crime Agency and how he wanted to cooperate with the UK government to bring back this money, because that's the purpose of this money. When you confiscate them, the main goal is to actually get it back to the right hands. And he actually wanted to do this. So you could use all this website, thegubatfiles.com, or the Twitter, or also the YouTube to find more information about his case and also about the current situation in Azerbaijan. Because when the journalists got imprisoned, there were a lot of articles published by the foreign media outlets in solidarity with the journalists. Like there's a France 24, there's The Guardian, OCCRP, Radio France, Le Monde, Le Soir, The Standard in Germany, I think. So they basically put together all the investigation that the journalists were working on and publish them. They finish them and then publish them. So right now there's a lot of news about what's happening in Azerbaijan, because it's outrageous. A country that sits on the border of Europe has such an important strategic geopolitical strategic location is basically siding towards the autocracy, siding towards the Russia. And we know that this did not end well once, very recently with Russia, and I think everything has to be done to prevent a second case to happen, a second Russia case.
Well, Ibad, thank you very much for your time today. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for inviting me.
Listening. This is Secrets and Spies.